Hagrid's class. Is this the most useless class? It's Zookeeper 101, essentially, right? These are magical creatures. So to them, it's just regular creatures.
It's about respecting non-humans just as
Then
much.
I respect rhinos. Right now, I've never met a
Do
rhino in my
you?
life.
Please, come on, come on!
Goodbye, Benny.
Welcome back to the Millennial Classics, y'all. On this show, we talk about the best movies, books, and culture-changing events from our generation. Mumburi, how you doing today?
Gang, gang.
Hey, I'm professional here, right, Tag?
Doing great, Swartig.
Burry, before you tell the folks at home what movie we're doing today, please introduce the guest that we have that's going to walk us through this movie.
Okay, so I put out a bus stop ad. Who wanted to do Harry Potter 3? And none other than Tanzania Brown responded. Probably the biggest Harry Potter head I know. Some of y'all out here do those audiobook bullshit. She actually reads the books. Yeah, recently had her book stolen
I'm so
and was
sorry.
mad about it all week. Like
My
that's
three books.
yeah.
Wait, wait, wait,
So
which three?
the first three, and they were hardbacks from when I was a child.
yeah,
Oh.
Baltimore
So
don't play.
literally from
Baltimore
like
don't play.
early
They will
2000.
literally
He
steal the
stole.
words out of your car.
I mean, Harry Potter, I'm happy to share with the world. So
But yeah,
I can't wait to
Tanzania Brown,
know.
everybody.
Yes, welcome, Taz.
Hello. I'm the resident Hufflepuff, obviously, because
Well,
I
that's
know
good.
y'all are not Hufflepuffs.
No. Very far from it. In
Yeah,
fact, I think
so.
I'm pretty sure Mulberry's a Slytherin. I can see it
Yeah, he gives true Slytherin, horrible energy, green energy, basement energy,
But he's
and you
also
need
the
like a
most skilled.
kind. Yeah.
Oh, but Taz, do you want to introduce yourself, or did Mumburi cover it all?
I think he covered it all. You guys gotta know, I love Sirius Black, and you know, I'm anti-Ron.
That first one is perfect because this is the perfect movie for you to join the series. Mumburi,
Yeah.
speaking of which, what movie are we doing?
We are doing my favorite Harry Potter movie, The Prisoner of Azkaban. Came out in 2004, 90% in Rotten Tomatoes, which is the second highest rated Harry Potter movie. Do any of you know what the first highest rated is?
The highest rated out of
Highest
all the
rated,
movies?
all the movies.
Five?
No.
Yeah, I'm gonna say it's probably one or eight.
It's eight.
Like,
One is below two, you heathens.
what?
Huge box office hit, made almost $800 million worldwide. The critical hit, box office hit. That's down to they got a new director this time, Alfonso Cuarón. After this movie, he like skyrocketed, did Pan's Labyrinth and Children of Men, both in 2006. He won an Oscar, I believe, for Roma. They transitioned from a 12-month shooting schedule in the first two to an 18-month from here on out. Longer production, more time. They used real locations this time in Scotland and London, and the first movie to be IMAX.
Ooh.
And a lot more effort went into this movie. Swartik, what was happening in
Yes.
2004?
So let me take you back into the millennial time machine. And June 4th, 2004 is when this movie was released. Usher, my man Usher is doing Usher things in music. Usher released, yeah, one of the biggest hits that come out of his discography from his studio album Confessions. He also did a collaboration with Alicia Keys on the track My Boo. Oh my goodness. Usher, Usher, Usher. In television, the medical drama House MD debuted in 2004. And on the flip side, the iconic sitcom Friends concluded in 2004. In fashion, Uggs. Taz, did you ever own a pair of
Chestnut baby, chestnut
Uggs?
tall, and I love them so much.
Uggs became so big that Tom Brady endorsed them, and I too own a pair of Uggs. Men Uggs, but I do own a pair of Uggs.
What are men
No, they're
Uggs?
unisex. They're unisex. Let me say
Men
that.
Uggs are the exact same shoe without the fur inside.
He takes the W at the bottom of the shoe and he flips it upside down.
And fun
Upside
facts
down.
about Uggs, they have a Ugg named the Taz and the Tazlita.
Oh, well, there
So,
you go. There
you
you
know, big
go.
fan, big fan.
And Mumburi, our top 10 grossing movies of 2004. We have done this before. Do you want me to go down the list, or do you want to hit
I
take a
just know
guess?
Shrek 2 is on there.
It's the number one pick.
Warned you. Ow! Ow!
Number 10, and I did 10, usually I do 5 just because I love mentioning National Treasure.
Amazing.
So, exactly. National Treasure is number 10. We have Polar Express, Shark Tale. 7 was Bourne Supremacy. 6 was The Day After Tomorrow. 5 is The Incredibles. 4, Harry Potter, The Prisoner of Azkaban. 3, The Passion of the Christ. 2, Spider-Man 2, and 1 is Shrek 2. Those are your top 10 movies of 2004. That was what was happening in 2004.
Can I just say, before we dive in?
Yes.
The Day After Tomorrow is such a millennial movie.
Yes.
Such a millennial movie. Iconic. Daniel Quaid.
He's the father.
And he does his G shit. I'll never forget. I'll never forget. He's like briefing. I think he's briefing the president. And the president, like, this dude's been blaring his horn ever. Everyone's been ignoring him. The president, like, has him do a briefing. And this motherfucker goes out on the map of the United States, draws a line across it, and goes, everyone above here is dead.
Yes. Oh, yes, God. Yes, but we have to do this movie.
I was like, yo, this dude ain't playing. It's not like, yo, if you in Chicago, you can get to O'Hare and get it below. Nah, none of that. You're dead. We need help with you.
See you later.
Taz, you have talked a lot about reading the books. Before we dive in, because I read a little bit about this, but I just wanted you to just throw your input in. How different is the books to the movies? Because I know when the book came out, this is the biggest book so far. So how different is it from the movies?
Honestly, it's just longer, right? Like, and so because it's longer, you get way more details. Sometimes you lose some of the action-packed scenes, right? Or you lose some of, like, the heartfelt moments. But I do think the movies do such a good job of, like, keeping the most special moments. Of course, it's only one or two times where the movie is actually better than the book. It happens, right? Like, you just lose some, like, the smaller characters especially. I think you really lose them in the movies.
Okay.
You know who one of my favorite characters is.
And
you
Cho Chang. Cho Chang?
Professor Trelawney.
Oh, okay.
You know, I'm a kooky teacher. So, and so is she. So you lose her. You lose, like, the choir director. What's his name?
The choir director? I literally just finished reading Prisoner of Azkaban, and I promise you, I can't remember the choir director.
Well, he's like the short, like, dwarf in the movie.
You can't say dwarf anymore, baby.
You can say dwarf.
I'm pretty sure you could say dwarf.
small person.
In the wizarding world, it's flipped. They say midget, we say dwarf. I just wanted to say, I don't want to step on anything you're doing in any comparisons, but do you think that this movie benefits a lot? Because it's one of those few movies where it's not like a movie based on a book where some people have watched it and not read the books. This is the type of movie where everyone who's watched it has essentially read the books and has that knowledge inside when they're watching the movie for the first time. They don't really explain the whole Marauders map, like Wormtail, Padfoot, Prongs, or whatever. They don't explain any of it. But just because I've read the book, I just realized I just subconsciously fill that information in so that when I see Wormtail going across, it's like, oh, yeah, I know what's going on. You really are watching the movie and for the first time and you don't have that background. It's a pretty weird scene. Like Lupin's reaction, like you don't actually know what's going on, and you're just like Scabbers is a dude, and you're like, and they were best friends. Like, it really is a logical leap, but when you read the books, it's just like boom, 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 makes perfect sense. Do you think that's an issue? Should count against it, or do you think that's a benefit to it?
A benefit because a lot of Potterheads get so upset by the movie because the director, he changes the genre. So of course, like, the books are just like pure fantasy, right? When you go to Barnes and Nobles, when you go to the children's section in the library, they're in the fantasy and fiction section. But the director, he makes it a horror film. Like, he adds a lot of elements of horror. So it's like these elements of, like, depression and sadness. The Dementors. So a lot of people get so upset because they're like, he fundamentally changes, like, the genre itself. I think because he changes the genre, you don't necessarily have to compare them in the same way, right? They can live separately from each other. Like, British readers have a totally different understanding of this book in general, because there are British folktales about the Grim and Padfoot, who is a black dog. When they're reading it, they're like able to make these connections with like the folk tales and the fairy tales that they read growing up. So like when they, like apparently Padfoot is a folk tale of a black dog that transforms and changes shape. You don't necessarily have to compare them. They can live differently, which is cool. So, but I still would say it's fantasy.
I haven't even thought about it from that perspective. All I was thinking when I was reading the book is every movie I watch after reading the book, I'm like, I want so much more. You guys, these movies are 2 hours and 30 minutes. And I'm like, where are all the details we're talking about? Where is the stuff that is missing from the book that should be in the movie? But I wanted so much more from the movie after reading the book. So much more. So I can definitely understand the folks who read the book and who are upset with the movie. Not so much for the genre change, because I think it might be necessary in some cases. We'll get to it when we get to those scenes. I'm a little on the other end of from you, Taz. I don't see it as you can judge it two different ways. I actually see it as the book is much better. It's just much, much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, all right. So like, before we dive into the scenes, I'll just ask a question to lighten the mood. how much would it take for you to get sucked by the mentor? 10 seconds. 10 seconds. A little suck from the mentor. If someone gives you 100K, it's like 10 seconds suck from the mentor.
Of course, no, I'm doing it.
100K?
Yes. No.
I know you got student loans. I know you got student loans.
No, I'm not doing that. I'll die.
It's a 10-second suck. That's it.
No, that I will die. That's the whole point. The mentors don't care. They don't stop.
All right, 5 seconds.
Am I a wizard in this or am I a human?
No, there's a wizard there.
I'm a muggle.
There's a wizard like on hand to do the Patronus charm at 5 seconds. 100K, 5 seconds.
Yeah. Which was
Neville Longbottom.
No, it's going to be Ron. We're all going to die, bro.
Ron with the broken wand. Yeah. All right. Let's get started. Obviously, we got to start this out. This is always the scene that pisses me off, and it always is at the front. So the Dursley scene, without fail, I always am just like, skip. But here's the thing with this Dursley scene. Number one, scariest creature in the building when she blows up to that size. And she's still screaming. Honestly, it's just unsettling. When she goes in on Harry's mom and dad, I literally was like, she's cooking something. I don't know what she's cooking. I don't know what she's cooking, but that's generational hate. That is great. And then she blows up.
Murray, I'm telling you, first of all, in the book, Aunt Marge is so much worse. So much, not so much worse. You just get a little bit more context. So there's a lot more shit talk going in there. And I literally, in my notes, have here, Aunt Marge might be worse than the fucking Dementors. Okay? And let me read you that quote.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and let me read you the quote that got me shaking in my boots. Remember, folks, this movie is rated PG. She says, and I quote, "If there is something wrong with the bitch, there's something wrong with the pup." I said, it's over. It's over. This isn't supposed to be a PG movie for kids. Get out of here.
This family sucks. Why do we keep having them? But at least we get Harry Potter's big dog moment, you know? Big dog! And then like the dap up, you know? Because Harry does that right to Dursley's face. Dursley tries to big dog him, and Harry just comes with the wand right there. And it's like, it's everything that you've been wanting from him since you saw that little cupboard underneath the stairs. And it finally happened. He stood up to him. That's why this is my favorite Dursley scene, because it's at least Harry's out of there.
Yeah. He stands up for himself finally, which is, it is really nice to see. They made Marge so bad to get Harry to that point, which is so, it's just smart. They just built, J.K. Rowling built that part of the book, and the director built the part, this entire scene, just so perfectly.
In the movie, I think it's better because she like, it's like she's so horrible to him. And it's like, she honestly just deserves to like pop, right? Like she deserves the worst. And in the movie, she actually gets that. Whereas like in the book, it's like, oh, she like gets stuck in the chimney.
Yep.
But like now it's like, yeah, you're like making her pain last so much longer. Dudley, I hate that kid. Like the you just want to like punch him in the face. And I hate how she like babies him, or when she lets the dog like drink out of the wine glass.
Yep.
It's like, you are so gross. It's like the grossest.
That's just white people doing white people, though.
That's true. Gotta check that like, one out. White people stay doing crazy. Muggles or not, like, they just stay doing the most. It's like she literally treats her dog better than Harry.
Shares a cup with her dog and then like slaps homeless people outside. Like,
yeah.
So I have the bus to Leaky Cauldron buildup. So
okay.
I'll just say this because I think the worst parts of this movie are the parts that are amusement park ride-ish or very slapstick physical comedy because I feel like it doesn't go well with the rest of the tone of the movie. Movie's so serious, it's so dark, and then you have the bus is going wild, we're making jokes. It's like, it feels like, you know, when you go to Warner Brothers and it's like the floor is shaking and you're like, that's the type of vibe it gets. I just think they just don't fit with the movie, and I can see why they're in there because it is a kid's movie and they're probably like, add some whimsy. But that bus scene, then to the Leaky Cauldron, then to, you know, the Cornelius Fudge talk.
Yeah, explaining why he's explaining not expelled.
Right. Yeah. Then to the Weasley family, serious black buildup. I have that all up because it's kind of the whole precursor and building up Sirius Black as the eventual big bad. They do it slowly from the bus all the way to Arthur explaining to him while there's the posters are behind him. And those posters are so sick. Honestly, like the newspaper things, that's probably one of the coolest things about the Harry Potter world, the moving pictures. And it's so weird because it feels magical to us, but it's literally just a movie on a thing. Like, we could do that now. Like, but in my heart of hearts, I'm like, that is so magical. It's on paper and the pictures are moving. I just feel like it's kind of cohesive in one building up to the big bad.
Also hate that scene, the bus scene, but I mainly hate it for the Jamaican accent. I just hate that.
Yeah, tickets are wearing it.
It's like, what is this? It's just so odd. And I just hate how like idiotic the bus driver is, which I guess is supposed to be funny, but it's like, you really don't know who Harry Potter is. This is the third movie. So it's just one of those things where it's like, I know it's meant to be funny that he doesn't know who Harry is, but it's like, come on, should know.
White people just found out about swag surfing this week. So
yo, Taylor, take it away, girl. You guys don't enjoy any fun. The bus ride was a good time. Listen, maybe I have this quote where the bus boy, he's not the driver. The driver is the blind old man. But the bus boy, when he's describing Sirius Black and he's like, he's a murderer, he's a big supporter of you know who. I'm now noticing, looking at all of my quotes, I like these quotes better just because of the accent when they say the quotes. But so it's really not that good of a quote. But the bus itself, maybe it is weird, right? But they did need a way for Harry to get to the Leaky Cauldron. And I thought it was a nice break from all of the seriousness.
It's like, but you would lock the beds down. I mean, what are we doing there?
Of course you would.
I'm sleeping. I mean, it's magical. There's magic. And then there's, I got to get the men's cycles in here, you know?
Yeah.
But it was cute. Yeah. It was cute when like Sirius pops up on him and he doesn't know. Oh, it's like, that's the best part. That's the best scene. And then we get introduced to Scabbers and Crookshanks. And that's Sirius that you're talking about. You meet like really important characters and they don't say anything, which is impressive. But it's also just like so goofy. It's just like, this isn't what I needed.
The one goofy scene in this movie that bothers me is when they first get to Hogwarts and the kids are like doing those animal noises. If that goofiness doesn't bother you and this goofiness does, I don't know what we're watching because we're not watching the same movie. But about what you just said, Taz, so I can at least understand you guys not liking the bus ride. It is a little silly. When they do get to the Leaky Cauldron, when they do meet Mr. Fudge and they explain all of that stuff, and then it gets back down to Earth and gets back down to the movie that we're watching, specifically Mumbury, what you said, that scene where Arthur, Mr. Weasley's explaining his situation and his relation to Sirius Black and how he needs to be careful when he goes to Hogwarts. That entire scene is beautiful. It's gorgeous. The way he's walking with him, the way he's pulling him away from other people. Like, if you just notice the scene, watch it over again, it's so well done. Like, it makes sense. He's like, I need to explain this to you. I shouldn't be telling you, but I need to tell you. It all makes sense. And you see his face in every single one of the posters. I really do enjoy it.
The important thing about this series is from this movie, it literally really sets the tone. Everything from here on is literally that dark, that gray. And some people might say it gets too dark. They're like, it's like everything is dark black and green and whatever. But just the tone of the movie and the colors you see, it really just stays this for the next couple movies.
I've been watching just a ton of interviews and whatever. Literally, the magic in this movie is so much more than Chambers of Secrets, which is so much more than Philosopher's Stone. Like, you have to remember, in Philosopher's Stone, Harry wins by touching Quirrell's face. That's the win. Magic in the movies increased exponentially.
And they defeat a troll by shoving a wand
in the nose.
Up his nose.
Yeah. So with the more magic, it's just more CGI, more time, more money. Does have a part as to why it becomes darker and darker and stays dark.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on.
Is he 14?
Who? In this movie?
Harry. His birthday. Yeah, he's 14.
He's in the third grade, 12. Right?
Third grade.
Third year.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Listen.
Sorry.
What 7-year-old you know is fighting the mentors?
I'm getting my owls. All right, so Lupin intro.
Yes.
Dementors, great evil creatures that we got here. And I just think if we're talking about the series as a whole, I think they're up there. I think Death Eaters and Dementors are kind of 1A, 1B in the not peak villain, but you know, like a bunch of henchmen type deal.
Yeah.
I think they're right there as the most iconic villains. Everyone knows who the Dementors are. Great intro to them. Little kiss of life, kiss of death, however you want to call it. I mean, this train is pretty good. And unless you guys want to talk about it, I can keep chugging. It wasn't a key scene for me. It was just, hey, nice to meet you, Lupin. Nice to meet you, Dementors. I'll mention the Trelawney class just because I just saw a great meme from the one black kid in this entire movie.
Oh, that's my guy.
when he describes the Grim with so much bass and so much ping. I mean, kills it, steals the scene.
Grim, taking form of a giant spectral dog. It's among the darkest omens in our world.
That's right. Black can be anywhere. It's like trying to catch smoke. Like trying to catch smoke with your bare hands.
He knows, it's like he was just told, like, this is the one shot you got. And he snags it. We got to talk about the Buckbeak Hagrid's class. Is this the most useless class? I know they're cutting classes. Some schools don't have music anymore. Some schools don't have art. Like, if I found out that they were cutting music and my kids still had to do Hagrid's class, I would flip out. It's Zookeeper 101, essentially, right? These are magical creatures. So to them, it's just regular creatures.
Yeah, just like animals to us. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But day to day, like you live in your like cul-de-sac, and then you go to work at the Ministry of Magic, and you come back. You're not seeing a buckbeak every two weeks, right? It's to you, it's literally just a magical creature that you would see in a zoo somewhere. I don't go to elementary school, and I'm not like, yeah, today I learned how to like take care of a cobra just in case, you know. I did like the little snake charm dance just in case, you know, I'm ever in a thing. Or like, oh yeah, they flew in a camel so I can learn how to ride it just in case. Like, we don't learn that.
No, you guys learned. You guys didn't have to take care of hamsters and crawfish in elementary school.
No.
Yeah, that's an owl. That's an owl. Wow. To them.
First of all, this is one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Because Harry's so free. Like, he just is so happy. This is one of the scenes that I think is actually better in the movie than in the book. Because he just, like, does a little quick lap around the Forbidden Forest. But in the movie, he's just happy. He's free. Also, they need to respect magical creatures. That's not, like, a theme of the whole movie. It's to respect, like, other beings human.
How many spiders do you think they killed driving that car through that forest?
No, they literally, remember Dumbledore at the end is like, yeah, you get to save two lives today. And they're talking about Buckbeak. It's about respecting non-humans just as much.
I respect rhinos right now. I've never met a rhino in my life.
Do you
can respect rhinos? Animals without having to capture them. Lock them near a tree.
Endangered. Buckbeak is endangered.
Swartic, where you land with this?
Yeah, so the thing is, the honest truth is, in the current world, yes, I do agree with you, Bilberry, but you have to understand, Taz is right. If throughout the books, throughout all of the books, number one, you have to just understand that in the Wizarding world, animals and humans are much more intertwined than you regular folks. That's just right. That's just the baseline. And yeah, you can say it's the owls and the cats and the rats, sure, but that's a whole lot more than you and I do. Every kid needs a transporting animal. That's just baseline. So more animals are in their lives. And part two is the next series after Harry Potter is Fantastic Beasts. There's obviously a connection between the animals in this universe and the witches and wizards in this
the
in this
main
world.
Character of the Fantastic Beasts guy is a weirdo because of how much he likes animals. Number one, everyone else in that movie doesn't have any animals. Number two, number three, I get what you're saying, but here's the thing. There is another class at Hogwarts where they use animals. Remember Sprout's class?
Yeah, where you were digging out the thing.
Yeah, yes. Mandrakes. I mean, yep. There's already a class that he knows how to use animals. Why is there a second animal class in my budget?
And also, he's teaching them how to be safe around animals. Look at Draco. He literally breaks his arm because he literally doesn't want to bow to an animal.
And that's the other thing. Hagrid's got to go. I mean, you...
No. You are too Slytherin.
Send him back to Azkaban.
He needs to... Yeah, he likes animals so much, he kisses the Dementor, you know? Hermione has to be like, my guy, he has to go to the hospital.
He's like,
it should probably be me. I am the teacher. Yeah, you're the teacher.
But why would Draco do that? He literally said, don't...
Now you're victim blaming.
Yeah, I am, because he's evil. Hagrid said, they're proud animals. Be careful.
And Draco's a proud boy. Draco's a proud boy.
He sure is.
There's a hierarchy. He sure is. Yeah. It is a beautiful scene. And I have to say this. That buckbeak is gorgeous to look at. It is just really nice to look at.
It's called Hippogriff.
Hippogriff. But his name is, Buckbeak.
Quick shout out to Defense Against the Dark Arts. That scene. This is actually a key scene. Defense Against the Dark Arts, you see Lupin in his element. I would say Lupin is the best Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher in the series. They do the whole Boggart scene, little foreshadowing with Lupin and his werewolf moon shit going on. Dementors strike again. I mean, if you had to rate the Defense Against the Dark Arts teachers, Lupin...
He's number one by far. It's not even close. Yeah. It's not even close. And by the way, I was going to mention in this, even compared to McGonagall, and maybe it's not fair, but when it comes to magical classes, I think Lupin does the most magical teaching, right? Even when you go to Professor McGonagall's class, it's cool because she transforms from a cat to a person. Cool, right? It's nice to see. But the rest of the time, they're sitting in their desk talking. Even the Mandrake scene. I would compare this to the first Quidditch lesson class, right? You learning actual magic. You see it in action. Everyone's in the line. They get their turn to do the magic. It's really, really nice. And then on top of that, just the CGI. Again, all of it looked really good. And Snape, the actor, being willing to do the dress and doing it so well, perfect. Last thing. You talked about the differences between the books and the movie. The Dementor doesn't come in the book. Professor Lupin jumps in front before Harry has a turn, because Professor Lupin's like, I don't want the rest of the class to see a version of Voldemort that you saw. But in the movie, the Dementors actually come out.
I think there's a couple scenes here that are kind of just building up the rep as Sirius is the main bad guy. And this is one of them. Fat lady's painting's ripped. Everyone causes a commotion. They sleep on the floor. We can't get some magic air mattresses here.
Dumbledore is slacking again.
This is why we need to cancel Hagrid's class and get some air mattresses in the budget. Dumbledore, Snape, having one of the most important conversations
in front of the kids.
This would be like if George Bush talked about 9/11, in front of the little class of kids.
On a hot mic.
Yeah.
I don't get what's going on.
I feel like they knew Harry was awake, right?
Dumbledore
knew. He was trying to warn Harry.
Something, bro. Because he was staring him down, bro.
And even right above him.
I'm like, what's going on, bro? Why are you doing this?
Yeah, and he's trying to sleep.
It's in front of all the other students. You're in the great hall. It echoes. There's nothing around besides students. Everyone is hearing what you're saying, Dumbledore. Come on, bro. It's silly.
Quidditch. It's back. Mm-hmm. The best part of the Harry Potter series is back.
You're
what
crazy.
Can I say about Quidditch in this movie? It's not the best Quidditch scene.
No, it's
frankly, it's one of the worst.
Yeah.
I will say Quidditch peaks for in the entire Harry Potter lore. Quidditch peaks. Well, actually, it peaks in the PlayStation 2 game Quidditch World Cup. But if we're not counting that, we're counting Goblet of Fire, the book Quidditch chapters, because it actually talks about the World Cup.
Yeah.
When we go over that, we got to talk about this. The idea of like being Victor Crumb still in school and at the World Cup. Because just in my head, I'm like, that is the only thing I can think of is Bronny right now at USC. Exactly. That's the only thing I can think of. All right, but back to this. Dementors show up. Harry falls off his wand. Breaks the old Nimbus. Who hasn't done that? First time I will say that, damn, Quidditch is pretty dangerous. Can we call off the game here?
This is when I would take my kid out of Hogwarts so fast.
Because they're giving me real Friday Night Lights vibe with the game must go on, because the people in the stands look miserable. There's Dementors floating in the sky. It looks as like there's a storm. No one can see shit.
It's thunder.
And literally, Harry is falling from like 20,000 feet and damn near bounces on the ground.
The game should have been canceled prior to even seeing a single Dementor. In the beginning of that scene, you see lightning in Harry's background. It's literally, like, you guys are up in the sky. Does lightning not affect wizards? Like, yeah. It's too much. It's too much.
Marauder's Map. Because I literally put some exclamation marks right next to it, because Marauder Map is probably one of my favorite magical items in the whole series. Ironically, one of the least powerful, because it literally only works in Hogwarts. It's not really like you're a great wizard with the Marauder's Map, but it's so OP in Hogwarts. It's so fun. It helps Harry so much. It makes you wonder why Fred and George even gave it to him permanently. Like, because those guys are the ultimate mischief guys. Like, they wouldn't use it.
Yeah, first of all, I love a Marauder's Map too. I agree with everything that you said. And I think we lose so much of Fred and George. Like, first of all, they are actually the comic relief in the book, like throughout the entire books, where you don't need like the bus scene or these like other like corny scenes, because Fred and George are actually so funny. And of course, they're like giving up the thing that they love the most, which is like this map, and they're giving it to him, even though Ron and Hermione just ditched him. Like, what kind of friends are you guys? You're horrible friends. You're literally horrible friends. Well, they're not, but like.
I mentioned it earlier. This is one of the key parts where the book really deepens this scene, because you're just like, this is what I've been waiting for. But I think this and the invisibility cloak are the two things where it's like, it's not just magical items, but it's also like connects him to his dad. Great scene. Harry sneaks out. So this is all one big scene. Meets up with the friends for the first time, who cut out on him with no hesitation. They said, see ya. I circled this scene because Draco and his boys. Yeah. This is why sometimes I just don't get the Wizarding World, because if I was a wizard and something invisible was fucking with me, I wouldn't freak out. The way they freak out in this scene, they freak out like regular people being tortured by like a ghost, whereas they're all wizards. I just don't understand the reaction, because someone would have been like, it's Potter with his invisibility cloak, or like someone's casting spells. Like, no, they just run away like literally 3-year-olds.
Okay, here's my thing. So, Wimber, you said that the Death Eaters are like iconic villains. Are they? Because like, look at their children.
Death Eaters?
I feel like, yeah, they're are they iconic?
Do not like, judge villains by the character of their children.
What? Look at their sons. They're cowards. And they're cowards. The Malfoys are like cowards. The only like scary Death Eater is Bellatrix.
Mommy!
In this book, like, Wormtail is the Death Eater. He's like a coward through and through. He's literally a rat. You know what I mean? And I feel like...
Yeah, we'll get to that motherfucker a little bit. Let's do this.
But even like...
He's a molester.
He's creepy. But even these three boys are like rats in themselves. You know what I mean? They're just such scum. You guys are bullies, but you're also like cowards. You're not really good at anything. Your dad had to buy your way
on the
Quidditch team.
You know, you can't possibly know any of that.
His dad did buy his
but he's not scum, and you don't know if he's a bad class. You're just making shit up.
No, he is. He literally is bad at class. Or wait, what movie was it where they like the two boys? They like baited them with cupcakes. They like
Chamber of Secrets.
Like, what?
Grab a Goyle, like, those two Goombas. about the Marauders map, everything that Taz said for Fred and George's defense or reasons as to why they gave it to Harry is very, very true. And I'm pretty sure the math adds up right that this is either the fifth or no, it's the fifth year because Percy's still there. They've had it for forever. The one thing about the map that I'm a little confused by, it says everyone's on the map. Everyone's on the map, but you only see the important teachers whenever they look at it. It's like, where's every other student? Why can't I see all of the other things? Or is it just reading your mind, telling you the people you want to see? The reason Draco and the boys are running away, in the book, they give a whole lot more context. In that scene, they're staring at this haunted house that all of the kids are really afraid of. So the question that Hermione asks Ron, do you want to get even closer? And Ron says no prior to Harry showing up, is because everyone is afraid of that house. So when the freaky stuff starts to happen near this very, very haunted house, that's why he freaks out more than normal. And then to the point for Draco specifically, in 1 and 2, there was a little bit of, dare I say, magic to his bullying. But in this movie, he just seems like a fucking douchebag bully. It's so unnecessary the way he's shoving folks left and right constantly. I hope his bullying goes back to the previous bullying. But right now, in this movie, I don't like his bullying style in this movie. If you could grade
it. Because he does it for the love of the game, to be 100%. Yeah. Yeah. He really loves this shit.
Exactly.
Nothing can take it away from him.
Pushes them down and continue to run. It's like,
He's just missing his Coretta. I think once he finds his
my God.
Then he's complete.
Who is his mom? Coretta's his mom.
Yeah, so the only reason why I had this, I kind of had the whole Hogsmeade trip in one, because there's a key scene at the end where Harry sneaks in. Honestly, for the entire series, we talked about the Marauders map, but no one item does as much heavy lifting as this invisibility.
Yep, you can say that 100%.
So he just sneaks into a meeting with Cornelius Fudge, McGonagall, and whoever, and he finds out that Sirius is actually his godfather. Great little nugget there. Really building this. This is the guy that betrayed his family, is his godfather. Godfather is still a big deal now? Is this still a big deal?
It is definitely a big deal.
Is it a legal term? No, the courts decide, right?
The court decides it, and it's usually next of kin.
That's the whole Hogsmeade trip. I kind of just had that rolled into one.
I actually have something to say about this.
Go right ahead.
Here's where I'm like, what's going on with you wizards? Sirius is like literally the most loyal character-wise. He seems like, he really is like ride or die for Harry's parents. Why would you believe he does this? Like, I feel like no one was like, I don't believe that. But it would have just been a bit more interesting if there was like one person that was like, I just don't really believe he did this. Yeah, but seems like they all so willingly was like, Sirius, like he really just flipped on them. But I'm like, does that even make sense for his character? I don't know. Maybe that was the whole point.
No. I agree with you wholeheartedly. But in the book, they describe the scene in which Sirius gets caught. Number one, Sirius is thought to be his parents' like person told on Lord Voldemort. That's what everyone already believes, right? That's just the background of the context of the situation. And when Pettigrew disappears with losing a finger, it's Pettigrew that kills all the people, but he turns into a rat and disappears, and they find Sirius there. So Sirius, with all these dead people around him, he's the only person who has magic, and everyone thinks that he's the one who told on the parents. So the evidence is there, and you can tell in a way that Dumbledore is not all the way believing it, but he can't deny the evidence that there's 13 dead bodies
first
around
Sirius. That's Dumbledore's golden fucking... like this go-to. I know the truth. I'm gonna let it ride. But I will say this: if the Potters died in France, this would have been one of the craziest Anatomy of a Fall spinoffs of all time.
I'm dead.
Was it serious? Did they fall? How did we do this? I mean, that trial would have been fire.
Putting Sirius on the stand. So good.
Harry learns Expecto Patronus. Is this the most famous spell?
No. What's that thing that...
There's Lumos.
There's
Expelliarmus.
I think the most quoted is what Hermione correcting Ron.
What's Leviosa?
Yeah, exactly. Leviosa. I think... Yeah, I think that's probably the most famous, but the most useful. Oh, well, yeah. I don't know.
So you in Uganda, someone tells you they know they love Harry Potter. What's the spell they're throwing? You think it's Leviosa?
It's Lumos. I literally say Lumos to my phone. Well, there is a difference between spells and charms, right? Yeah, so like
I think, understand that. I'm asking what the most famous is. Well, if we include potions.
No, I think Expecto Patronum. I think that's like what you say, right?
Probably.
What would your Patronuses be?
Mine would probably be a fucking turtle or some shit. Some absolutely useless admiral. Because I'm getting my 10 seconds.
I hope it's your spider. That spider. You so love.
I want to say like a gorilla or like a giraffe.
I want to be like you're from Uganda.
A rhino.
All right. A rhino. Taz, what you got?
I would also want mine to be a monkey. But probably it would be like something cute, like butterfly.
It's not going to give you much time, bro. I promise you.
My butterfly? Distractions.
I want some calamari. I want an actual plate of calamari to save me.
Yeah, honestly.
A little drizzle of lemon, some salt, some marinara sauce right on the edge. I will say this. It seems to me like Harry is the only kid that goes out at night in the middle, like by himself. Gives real weirdo vibes. I will say this. Like, I think if Harry wasn't the protagonist of this entire series, he would be a complete weirdo.
Emo vibes.
Snape finds him. Honestly, best line reading of the movie for me is bit of parchment. It's just a bit of parchment.
Bit of parchment.
I was like, bit of parchment. The kids out here just carrying a bit of parchment. But I just, yeah, spare bit of parchment. That's what he tells Snape. It's just a spare bit of parchment. It's 1 a.m. in the morning. What are you doing with this urban of parchment?
No, Murray, in his defense, in Harry's parchment defense, literally the scene prior, Snape takes over Lupin's class and he tells everyone, I need 2 scrolls of parchment on werewolves. So it's a thing. It's a thing in Hogwarts. It's a thing in the Wizarding World. So if he has a bit of parchment, he's okay. It counts. Right. He gets it.
He's writing an essay at 1 a.m.
Lupin finds him, saves his ass, confiscates it, tells him about Wormtail. Before, there's a whole climax, which I kind of, you guys are going to hate this, rolled it into one. That's when like the movie starts chugging and it's about to reach the station. And it really just goes off the rails. But there's a scene before that, which is key to that end scene. But when they go down to Hagrid's, talk to Hagrid, Cornelius shows up, Lucius shows up, they sneak out the back, they watch him die. And before all that, obviously, they fight with
Malfoy.
Yeah.
Great punch.
Great punch. I think they did Malfoy dirty in the movie. He's really snivelly and whiny. The movies kind of teeter back and forth between he's like Harry Potter's rival and he's a bad guy, but he's competent. And he just comes through with the one-liners like filthy mud blood. I mean, and they kind of let it up this time because I heard you fainted, which honestly is a hilarious line because, I mean, who's out here fainting?
He did.
Who's out here fainting? And the fact that Harry actually fainted makes this extremely funny. But then it's like Hermione's like has what a fist in his face or a wand in his face, and this dude, his lips is trembling.
The way you're describing him, Murray, I think makes more sense in the way I was like, I don't like the way he bullies, but competent, right? In the other movie, right. He is a rival. He is competent. You know that he's good at magic. In the dueling club, he does best Harry the first time they go at it in Chamber of Secrets. So like in this movie, he is this whiny little like asshole, right? And that's it doesn't feel like the, you know, Harry's like antagonist. It doesn't feel that way.
So that's just the one thing where I'm like a little bit off. But other than that,
I'm sorry. But I also have to say, even though that is all happening, I love what this movie does for Hermione. Hermione is the best wizard. Hermione is the fucking greatest witch. Like, I feel like she's carrying Harry and Ron, especially Ron, on her back constantly. And this movie really shines that, like puts a light to that. Everything that needs to happen happens due to Hermione. Without Hermione, Buckbeak died, Sirius gets caught, like the whole, it's over.
But I will say you skipped a major scene, which I actually think is the start of the climax. Professor Trelawney's vision. She literally tells you exactly what happens. Sort of when you were like, it does so much for Hermione. I honestly think like Professor Trelawney and Hermione are like foils in this this, right? She's like the kooky witch that no one believes. Like everyone kind of thinks her class is a joke, except like the other two girls in the book, like Lavender and the other girl. Like,
yep.
They're like, oh my God, Professor Trelawney is like, you know, she's the shit. She's smart. Yeah. She like everything she says is right. And it is actually right. Like, sure, it's interpreted differently. But when she says Harry's going to meet the Grimm, he does. When she says Master is going to meet the whatever. What does she say? Like the Master and the slave will be together again.
Yeah,
that happens. Like
exactly.
And Hermione like hates her and like hates divination
because it's a like, bullshit class.
It's not. It's literally not. And like Hermione's like, I want to go to ancient ruins instead. I'm like, Hermione, can you stop being a pick me for 1 second and just actually enjoy a girly girl's class for a second?
We do come to learn that she's doing like 19 classes all the same year, which I think Professor McGonagall allowing that is insane. It's like, okay, allow your student not to have any sleep.
You can tell kids no. You can just tell kids no. You work for her. You would start the other way around. Like, you can tell kids no. Kids want to do 18 classes. You're just like, no, pick 9 and keep it moving.
Let's go. Yeah.
You know what? If you want to jump up a grade, jump up a grade. All right? But don't make my life more difficult. I got to bend space and time to accommodate you.
Yeah.
Yuck.
And you're like, and she's like gaslighting Harry and Ron. Because they're like, were you here? And she's like, no, we've been here the whole time. It's like, why are you even in divination?
Do you want to talk about Wormtail and Ron's relationship now?
I want to talk about it for the rest of the
It's somewhere between Jared Fogle.
Jesus Christ.
And so Stuart Little.
It's a little
so,
smart, right?
It's much closer to Fogle, Jerry.
If you're Arthur Weasley and you find out a grown man's been sleeping with your kid,
and you took them to Egypt,
Tad's more mad. You flying him out, expenses paid.
You're flying him out. So Scabbers is a baddie rat.
I need Scabs at All-Star Weekend, sleeping on the floor.
Any person that's willing to be a rat for 12 years.
Oh my God. Pathetic.
The best part of that is you have to be the kind of dude that goes, I can be any animal I want. My top three are rat, cockroach, and worm or whatever. I mean, like some shit is just crazy.
The greatest thing is when he transforms back into a human, but this dude looks like a fucking rat. He's the perfect casting. He's like as close as Harry is to the book Harry. This guy is the perfect casting for a man who lives as a rat. Just beautiful.
Amazing.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And honestly, it's like, if me and my homies are like going to be animagus or whatever, and one of them is like, I'm a rat, I'd be like, no, you're dead. You're done. It's like, I'm a dog. James was a deer, right? Or a horse.
Yeah, he was a stag. A stag. Yeah.
It's like, and then you're a rat, and no one had any questions. Yeah. No one said anything.
The thing is, though, the only like kudos I would give him at all is because when they describe that they all decided to become these animals and animagus, whatever the word is, to sneak off and help Lupin when he was young and he would have to transform into the werewolf. The rat would go into the house with Lupin and have Lupin chase him around to get his energy out. So they did explain how Pettigrew was very helpful to Lupin when he transformed into a werewolf without having Lupin harm other people, which was nice, but he made the rat decision before knowing how helpful that was.
You can be a cat, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
It's impressive what Wormtail does. It's like method acting. It's some Daniel Day-Lewis shit for 12 years. Like, what's not impressive is the entire Weasley family allowing their youngest son to have a pet rat. I just can't imagine.
You can't blame them, though, because these animals are so much smarter than regular animals. So when you have a Scabbers that lives longer and
he was a weirdo with the rat in school that entire time. It wasn't like it was like, oh, shit, Ron's got a pet rat. It's like, dude, you got a pet rat.
And they're poor. And I hated that.
I refuse to believe poor people would let such a poor animal, like their kid being a poor animal. Like, I think the last people, if anything, it would be Malfoy with the pet rat. Because he wouldn't give a shit.
He's like a coward.
The family would just be like, "Yeah, I'm rich. I'll have a pet rat. It's cool."
Yeah.
Malfoy would have the
poor people have a rat.
I just refuse to believe that the Weasleys would be like, "Yeah, we let our kid have a pet rat." They do that whole amusement park shit with the trees, and then they slide in, and then lo and behold, the tree on campus leads right to the Shrieking Shack. Who saw that tunnel happening? Hamas.
I thought you were going somewhere else with that joke.
The big family, the big reunion. Wormtail, Padfoot, and I can't remember Lupin's nickname. But they're all there. Confront Harry. It all goes down. Snape shows up.
Yep.
Snape gets taken out by Harry, which, I mean, expulsion. Can we get an expulsion here? You can't be attacking.
Please.
You can't be attacking teachers. Sirius takes a really long time to get to the point. An incredibly long time. Spit it out. Yo, can we get Wormtail in the first shot?
Yeah.
I know he's good with being a rat, but yo, you had him right
once
there.
Once he's a human being, why are we letting him walk around?
Kill him.
Or tie his hands up or do something. It's like, let me just trust this dude who's been running around as a rat for 12 years to walk and follow my order. Come on, man.
Especially when he's going to get like the Dementors. Like, he knows what his fate is. Method acting, because he goes right to Ron and he goes like, yo, I've been so good for you. It's like, dude, you know, this dude was like, I don't know, he must have been scratching Ron's ass or something. So, I mean, there must have been a special relationship. Because I don't know what's going on. Because Ron was like, all right.
Yeah, Ron was holding onto that rat way too tightly. I'm like, Ron, let the rat go. I mean, they're talking about this rat committing murder. Can you just let the fucking rat go?
Ron's like, I need 2 minutes with Scabbers alone.
Yeah.
Honestly, the best part about this whole sequence is they fail.
Yeah. Sirius
goes to prison, does hard time the way he's supposed to. Lupin goes crazy, his secret's out, and Wormtail gets away. So it's a disaster night for Harry and the gang. But lo and behold, Hermione's secret, which she witnesses everything, doesn't say anything. Dumbledore has to trundle out. Dumbledore doing the least work out of any movie, still in his morning robes, to be perfectly honest. Who knows? And then just tells him, yeah, use the time machine shit I gave you, and then walks out. That's the extent of Dumbledore's help for the whole movie.
It's like, why wouldn't he go back in time? I mean, he knows how to use it, right? He could have fixed a lot of things, but look.
Could have fixed everything.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have also just sprung Sirius out because, I mean, it looked like no one was watching. This motherfucker could have just apparated there or phone his broomstick or however fucking Dumbledore gets around and gone up there, let him out, come back down and been like, Sirius escaped. This dude is literally escaped Azkaban. You cannot expect him to be like holed up in Hogwarts.
But in Hagrid's infamous words, in the very first movie, he says the only place that is safer than Gringotts Bank is Hogwarts. So it can be difficult.
For kids, right?
No, he said period. When he said they were talking about stealing gold and stealing like all the magical devices that was stored in Gringotts. Not for kids, for wizards, period.
Let's ask the elves how safe they feel at Hogwarts.
Okay.
So that's the house elves.
Yeah, this is back to wrap. So, but bro, there's a lot happening at the end. Yeah. There's a lot happening at the end.
And we haven't even gotten to the rewind.
I mean, I just think it's so endearing. Like when Sirius is like, you know, I'll be your godfather. We'll live together. We'll have this beautiful like countryside life. It's just so precious.
I have that down in my deadbeat dad playbook. If I ever need to go back into my son's life, I'm gonna take the serious notes.
You like, if you were in prison for 12 years?
Prison, second family, third family, who knows?
The only thing pre-rewind is like, I know you say every movie we review that Harry has it out for Snape, but Snape has it out for Harry in a really weird, unproductive, like crazy way. It's too much in this movie. The way that he's going after Harry for it's not every little thing. Harry's doing some wild ass shit in this movie, but like, it's too much. The way he comes in there, he's ready to like drop everyone, give me a reason to kill you, give me a good reason to kill you, but the kiss of death from the Dementors would be better. Understandable. It is understandable, right? But if you see Lupin, the person who's also a professor with you, that's telling you, hold up, Snape, give him a minute. But Sirius does really need to talk fast. The student is like, oh, I missed you. Let's have a reunion while everyone over here is like on the brink of death. Come on. Dude is,
and he's being so vague. And he's using, like, because they do this thing where everything he says means two things to everyone in the room.
Yeah.
So that he's like, everyone's still training their wands at him. Like, the simple rom com stuff, you know, like when rom coms, when it's like the girl thinks the dude is cheating, but he's like, he went off to get her a gift, but they're talking past each other. And yeah, it's literally the exact same thing happens. Yeah, it's the same thing.
Last thing, I just really like how gross the werewolf looks. Like, it would have been easy for them to make the werewolf look really badass, but that's a gross looking werewolf. And I like that it looks bad. It adds to the crazy weirdness, dark scariness of this movie.
And my favorite Sirius line is when he's like, late as always, Snape. You can tell it's like, since we were kids, you always try so hard and you never quite get it right.
But
and
also,
I just feel like that's Slytherin and Death Eaters in general. It's like, trying so hard and you never quite get it. Right.
Sucks to suck.
And it's just, it sucks to suck. And like, you suck.
Snape, honestly, walking in that room must have been like, Jack and Pot. Come on. That dude walked into the room and he's like, number one, I got the number one most wanted. I got his little buddy in that little spy in the faculty. I got this kid that I hate.
I've
been known.
I hate
that apple.
Because his dad bullied me. And
then I don't know why Wormtail's here, to be perfectly honest, but I'm sure he's perfectly innocent. But Snape would have known about Wormtail's betrayal from the Dark Eater side, right?
But did they also think he was dead?
Yeah, everyone thought that.
I think
once Snape saw Wormtail, wouldn't Snape be like, oh,
yeah.
Shit. Yeah. But Snape is just like, nah, I got you, man. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on with that scene. But all right, so now let's get to the time sequence part.
The rewind.
So this is the part where this must have been too complicated for little kids. Like, from this part on, I just feel like it's really tough to follow your first time, because essentially what they do is they jump back in time. They're following themselves. Now, to save Buckbeak, all they have to do is loosen it while after they've seen him in that like 30 second stretch, and then they let him go into the forest, they are still seen, and then
the Dementor,
right?
Yeah,
from the werewolf,
right?
Oh yes, Hermione saves Harry from the werewolf.
They go up to, and then they use Buckbeak to get Sirius back out.
Sirius saves Harry and Hermione.
Yep,
and then Harry chases Sirius. A boy's best friend, right?
And then Harry saves himself. It turned out it was Harry that saved himself. We talked about the twist in the first two movies. In the first two movies, it wasn't really a twist. It was Quirrell the whole time, and Quirrell was Voldemort. Yeah, whatever. Second movie, at least, it was the book. There was a snake in the sewers. After hours, I mean, we're getting better. This movie, Sirius is not the bad guy. Great little twist. Voldemort doesn't show up. Also a great little twist. I mean, this is just great. There's no Voldemort.
The bad guy's a rat. I mean,
the bad guy is a rat. And Ron, this is a key part. They leave Ron behind and it's a success. And if they could hone in on that and realize where that success comes from, I think if you can see the task in front of you and you don't see any chess being played at all, I think you just say, let's leave Ron behind and let's get this really done.
Yeah.
Do you guys have anything about the ending of the movie? Harry and Sirius, they don't get to stay together. Sirius has to go on the run again. Why? We don't know, because there was five witnesses that saw Wormtail. So that should clear Sirius. Dumbledore is the most powerful wizard in the planet and no one gives a shit what he thinks. Great. Great.
Yeah.
All that power. All that
yeah, always.
And Dumbledore, doesn't do anything.
Dumbledore is damn near useless. I mean, I would rather have Sleepy Joe as head of Hogwarts. In the first movie, everyone is like, oh, Dumbledore, like whispers Dumbledore. He has a sense of reverence.
Yeah.
Then as the movies go on, you just see every professional character shit on this dude and just be like, nah, we don't really believe you, Dumbledore. Nah, this, nah, that. And I don't get it. Dumbledore is the most powerful person with no power I've ever seen. But that's my two cents.
I mean, like, I don't know how big of a deal, like, the schools are, but he's a principal at a school. LeBron James was the principal of a school. I mean, like, how serious are you taking what he says? Like,
I mean, if that school is the school in the country, maybe you plagiarized a little something in your past.
I feel like Dumbledore is, like, he's so successful because everyone loves him. You know what I mean? It's like he would win Survivor. They all are just so loyal and they trust him with their lives. But they're like, yeah, he's got it. Like, they just have such unwavering faith in him. That's what actually gives him his power. I'm not sure if it's like,
what they
well, he is supposed to be the smartest, but.
What do you mean? He has the Elden Wand. He took down Grinovich or whatever that Grindelwald.
Oh, yeah. I
mean, this dude is like a legend in the game.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
Umbridge takes him out like that.
Well, yeah.
I mean, what?
It's so bad.
The part where Harry saves himself, I really, really do like. I really like the idea that Harry so badly wants to see his dad, that he's watching himself get sucked away. Hermione's like, your dad's not coming.
Say and that he's again. Like,
getting sucked real bad. And then he's like, you know what? I have to do it. And then he ends up doing it. And again, I'm saying, like, the magic portion, it's so real in Prisoner of Azkaban. I see the most magic so far in this movie, and it all makes sense, right? I always say that Hermione is the star, is the reason most things get done. But Harry has the bravery, like, we have to do the thing right now, no questions asked. I'm not going back for help. And he just has the talent. Right. So him doing that, the Expecto Patronus so well that it's blowing away the 20 Dementors. It's a perfect way to end it, on top of the fact that he gets his fire stick, broomstick, whatever, and flies away. But I really do like the idea that he's willing to watch himself almost die to get a chance to just see his dad. I love that aspect.
And he gets a best friend, right? Like, Sirius is, first of all, I love all the dog references in this movie. But, like, Sirius, you know, a dog is a boy's best friend.
Yep.
And he finally gets his best friend. Like, we see in the first and second one that, like, he clearly needs a mentor, right? Like, it's not going to be Mr. Weasley. It's not going to be Lupin.
And it's definitely not going to be Dumbledore.
Yeah. Like, and he just is, like, desperate for a father figure.
Yep.
And Sirius isn't quite a father figure, right? Like, he's his best friend. He's, like, an older, cooler, bad boy brother. You know what I mean? And he finally just, like, gets his best friend, who is also a dog. And it's so cute when Sirius is like, I actually have a pleasant disposition. Yeah, and sadly has to go in hiding. But, like, you see him just finally have an adult in his life that he trusts.
Yeah.
And that he can, like, talk to about anything. That, like, even though the books get darker, but it's like, at least he has someone. You know what I mean? Where it's like, he actually is someone that's, like, just for him. It's not like Ron's dad or, like, Dumbledore is, like, everyone's principal, right? But it's like, Sirius is
Harry. So Harry, yeah. I hear you.
Harry needs a scabbard. I do want to mention,
yeah,
before we end this, which it's been a great pod. I've learned so much from everyone. We have to talk about the new casting additions, because they've been great for this movie. We've talked about Sirius a lot, but Gary Oldman killing it in this in this movie. We haven't talked about Dumbledore switching. Michael Gambon is now the new Dumbledore in this movie. Mm-hmm. Does a good job of not doing anything. The best comment is no comment, I guess we can say. So there's that.
Mm.
Emma Thompson, Trelawney.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I think she overqualifies.
So good. No, she's so good. She's so good.
I think she is overqualified for that role.
100%. But Emma Thompson doing it is fantastic. Yep. Yes.
Killed it. David Doulis is Lupin. Good. Solid.
And who is the actor who plays Pettigrew, the rat? I just wanted to, he just does such a good job looking like a rat. I love it, but I really like it. Yeah. I'm like, that's so good. That's so good. Couple of notes before we wrap up. The B-roll of the Dementors throughout the movie was just so perfect. Like, it added so much to, like, the scariness. Like, it just random times it would just zoom out of Hogwarts and you'll see a Dementor fly by and the grass ice up and the flowers die. It was nice. I really like those B-rolls. And then lastly, I just want to see what that Harry coming back to the Dursley scene was. I would love to just see him have to walk back and knock on the door.
Their asses, yeah.
And they'd be like, look at this bumblebee trying to get back. Any final thoughts before we wrap this bad boy up?
No. I think we got everything. I honestly think we killed this one.
I think so too. This is perfect. Taz, thank you so much for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, please, if you want to hear the book reviews of the series, go check out our podcast. We definitely want more folks to join the podcast. The link will be in the description box below. We are going to continue this Harry Potter series. We've got, what, 5 more movies?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 5 more movies and 4 more books to do. So, join us on this process, and until next time, deuces.